Fahrradio wird unterstützt von SRAM. Mehr Informationen zur Marke und zu den Produkten findest du unter www.sram.com. Willkommen bei Fahrradio, dem Podcast für alles, was mit Fahrrädern zu tun hat. Heute gibt es ein Interview mit Damien de Klerk, dem Geschäftsführer von Local Motors in Europa. Der Originaltitel auf der Visitenkarte lautet Executive Vice President EMEA. Thomas und ich haben ihn am 20. März 2015 in Berlin getroffen, wo er sein Büro hat. Er hat uns erzählt, was Local Motors eigentlich macht und welche Pläne die Firma für die Zukunft hat. Aber zuerst will Thomas etwas über seine Vergangenheit wissen. Das Interview ist auf Englisch und von Hotellobbygeräuschen untermalt. Dies ist die Rohversion. In einer späteren Version werde ich die einzelnen Absätze noch einmal mit einer deutschen Übersetzung versehen. Das ist aber recht aufwendig und deshalb stelle ich diese Version hier schon mal online.
No worries. Okay. And what's your background then? Are you an engineer?
My background is in mechanical and production engineering. Mm-hmm. And then I moved very quickly into marketing studies, started to work and did a master in management and moved in different companies, always in roles involved in sales, marketing, etc. So before that I had experience in the battery industry. So everything that was powering the forklift trucks, batteries that were powering the golf carts, this type of applications.
But like the pre-hybrid era.
Oh yes, pre-hybrid.
So with the
lead acid type of batteries. So the old generations of batteries that are still very well in use, but that are not as energy dense as the new technologies. So before joining Local Motors, I left my job at Westfalia Automotive and I wasn't really having a lot of fun. I wanted to have a little bit more fun, so I said, okay, I'm going to start a company to do vehicles for the European market. Mm-hmm. The idea was to do eco-friendly, enthusiastic vehicles. And I started to work on the business plan, the funding, and I heard about Local Motors around that time. I approached the CEO, Jay Rogers, at the end of 2010 at an event he was attending in Paris. And I asked him if I could get access to the Local Motors community to design the vehicles I wanted to put on the roads in Europe. And he invited me to come and see how they were actually doing. So I took a plane a couple of weeks later, spent 3 days with the team in Arizona. Got to understand a little bit more how things were operating, and as Jay and I were getting on together pretty well and had a quite aligned vision, he invited me to join the company. So I looked after the business development of the company for 3.5 years. I started by being a program manager for one of the vehicles that we have built. The vehicle is the one that we've done for DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project. So, just in a few words, what Local Motors is doing. We design, build, and sell vehicles. Like any other vehicle manufacturer, this is the three things that we're doing. The thing is that we're doing it a little bit differently. In terms of designing it, we design the vehicles with the help of an online community. Today, this community is more than 48,000 people from all over the world. They are from 130 plus countries. And we invite them to join the fun and engage on the platform through what we call a co-creation process. We basically co-create our vehicles, whether that starts from an idea to a vehicle that is on the road and we need to iterate on that vehicle. So depending on the stage or the phase of the development, we apply different type of engagement, different type of tools. It can be competition, challenges that we run on the platform. It can be also makeathons or hackathons. can be just straight collaboration on the platform. And this process enables us to go faster than a typical OEM would. For example, our first vehicle, which is a full-size off-road vehicle called the Rally Fighter, between the day one of our community members, Sang-gu Kim, South Korean designer, posted a side sketch of the Rally Fighter till the date we actually put it on the road and were able to put it in production and sell it, that was an 18-month process. Mm-hmm. When a typical OEM vehicle development is 5-6 years, sometimes more. So by applying more brain power, we managed to reduce the time to market. When our community members come to the site, they share ideas, they share CAD files, they share concepts. All those are protected through the Creative Commons license. So it's open source, but mm-hmm. it's for non-commercial applications. So if local motors take one of those ideas, one of those concepts, and put those in production, then we have a royalty that is given back to the community members. Once we have developed a vehicle, then we take it in production in microfactories. We currently have one microfactory in Arizona. We're building two more in the US this year. So at the end of the year, we'll have three. So Arizona, one in Knoxville, in Tennessee, the other one in Washington, DC. Our goal is to expand this network of microfactories, and that's why I'm in Europe, mm-hmm. to look after the growth of the network here. Our goal is to have 100 microfactories within 10 years. And to talk a little bit more about the microfactories have three missions. The first one, it is a lab, a laboratory. This is where we work on the concepts, on the vehicles, and go from an idea to a prototype. And this is where our team is interactive, but also where our community is invited to come. So our community members have access to the tools that we are using to develop our vehicles. So that might be small-scale 3D printers, large-scale 3D printers, water jet cutters, CNC machines, metal benders, welders, anything that we have access to, the community has mm-hmm. Have access to.
But where does the initial ideas come from, and how is the, like, let's do the Rally Fighter, mm-hmm. because maybe every boy dreams of things like that, but mm-hmm. the community is so large, mm-hmm. there must be someone which is not the wife of the chief executive that decides for one design.
Basically, we're driven by demand, and that's I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what we're launching next week. It's really about defining with the local stakeholders, the local customers, what type of vehicles we should be putting on the market locally. For the Rally Fighter, it was that community member who posted the side sketch that got a lot of very, very positive feedback from the rest of the community. Everybody was very excited about it. And as the company at that time was looking for building their first vehicle, this is the one they picked, and going from this site sketch to the vehicle, got the community that was small at that time very engaged, about 500 people participating in the development of the Rally Fighter. Today the community is far larger. And when we are working on a project, then there's a couple more people mm-hmm. that are mm-hmm. engaging. And again, this diversity brings us different perspective, brings us more educated information when we're conducting a development.
Mm-hmm. But you have some, you probably need somebody that is at Local Motors, who sort of is a studio engineer or whatever, who brings together all that
Definitely.
Stuff. Because I mean, there are different file formats, uh-huh. CAD formats, uh-huh. and things. Somebody who like makes it match.
Exactly. Well, we've got a couple of those profiles. They are community managers. They are people that are professional in their fields, they might be designers or engineers, and they are interacting with the community on those subjects and funneling the efforts towards the product life cycle and development cycle. So we have in-house the capability of doing it. Just doing it internally would take us probably the same time as other OEMs would take, but by applying the openness model, having more people participating, we're managing to reduce that time.
But somebody's got to have an eye on quality and things.
Exactly. Quality, making sure that the files that are submitted are also complying with the local regulation. That's what we're doing on a daily basis. For the North American market, they might not be well-tuned for the European market. For example, I wouldn't see a lot of rally fighters driving down the streets of Berlin.
Maybe
Moscow. There might be some level of demand over there, or in the Middle East, for example. We've sold a couple of those vehicles, but they're not very well tuned for an urban environment in the old Europe. So we're launching a new challenge around urban mobility. And we've stopped teasing it yesterday. We'll have a large announcement next Wednesday on the 25th. We'll be at the Berlin Rathaus, the town hall of Berlin, to announce the challenge and putting it live on our platform. So we're looking after people that have ideas around what urban mobility is going to be in the year 2030. Our goal here is to involve the local stakeholders in the development of those concepts, providing feedback directly to the designers and engineers that will share their thoughts. We've already engaged them in the preparation of the challenge. We have interviewed them during a scoping session to put together the design brief that we're going to reveal on the 25th. And those stakeholders will be involved in the co-creation process. It will last a couple of weeks, and at the end of this co-creation phase, we'll ask those stakeholders if they want to take the next step, if they're interested in seeing those concepts become reality. And if we've got enough traction here in Berlin, then we'll open a lab here to prototype the vehicle, get validation from the local stakeholders, and then invest in a full-scale microfactory in a production site for the local market. If we get traction in another market, meaning that the concept might be also suitable for Paris or London or Madrid, if we get more traction over there, then we will be driven by that demand and we'll open the microfactory over there. Now, as we've engaged those local stakeholders for the last couple of months and have started to generate those relationships, there is a high probability that the first microfactory will be in Berlin.
Who are those local trade holders?
Those are people that are involved.
Stakeholders.
Those people are
people. This thing funktioniert, oder?
Yeah.
Good. Those people are people from the Electromobility Agency of Berlin, for example. People from the municipality that we've interviewed about urban planning and the trends that are impacting urban mobility. People from BVG. BVG in Berlin, so public transport organization, logistics organizations, interviewed people from Innotset, for example, who is a joint venture between Deutsche Bahn and Siemens that are working on the field of mobility. And we are currently packaging all this information in something that is digestible for our community, and we're going to release that next week. That's a pretty exciting moment for local motors, because we're really going to see emerge concepts that are really relevant for the local market.
So is that a car?
Well,
Can you say that? Is this the future?
The future mobility? Is definitely not the car. I cannot reveal everything, but the video states that we've got too many cars, and it's not the answer. So there are fields where some technologies are going to be really impacting deeply the way people are getting around. Autonomous vehicles, for example, lightweight materials and new production technologies are going to drastically change the way we see mobility in an urban environment. So that's where we want to apply the brain power of our community to develop new concepts. So cars, as we know them, are definitely not what we're looking for in the context of this challenge.
And you've made some sort of a bit of a rave with a 3D uh-huh. printed car.
Sure.
But you're not limited to 3D printing, as
not
you've got
all.
The Rally Fighter is a uh-huh. and the motorcycle is like a classic
tubular chassis. Yes.
And if you want to really go into like production, uh-huh. probably 3D printing is not the tool that will like really make a large number of vehicles, whatever they look.
It all depends on the application, the vehicle, the volumes that you want to produce. I think 3D printing today is an emerging technology, and we're investing a lot in it. And for small-scale production, I think it can be a really good tool. Yeah. For
it is sort of an FDM that you have there.
It is an FDM, but it's a large one. It's the size of a container, basically.
Yeah, right.
And today, the process is for the Strati, the first vehicle that we've 3D printed. To print it takes 44 hours. Then you have to add some subtractive manufacturing. You surface some of the parts of the vehicle to fit the different mechanical components, for example, and that takes another 10 to 20 hours. We're working on reducing that time to less than 24 hours. With that time to process a full vehicle, and the process being completely autonomous, and just add a couple of lines of 3D printers, you can reach some decent numbers in terms of volume.
But you get the chassis parts and battery from Renault, is that right?
Not the chassis, no. That's the interesting thing about the 3D printing, is that we are actually printing
the
power
the wheel, wheels and dampers and
yes, we're taking off
and the links
shelf.
And
so for the powertrain in itself, so there's the motor, the battery, the drive shaft, the steering wheel. The shock absorbers and the suspension, yes, we're taking it from, for the first one, we took it from a donor vehicle, which is the Renault Twizy, which was cool, but the Renault Twizy powertrain is a little bit under dimension for our application, so we're currently working on sourcing alternative powertrains.
Not fast or strong enough? Or?
Well, it is not dimensioned for it. The weight of the Strati is a bit higher than the one of the Twizy, so we just need to find the right fit.
So Renault wasn't really involved.
Well, Renault was involved to some extent when we looked at the development of the Strati. Yeah. We needed a powertrain, and at that time we were in discussion with Renault, just looking into what we could do.
Because Renault is like that, and Volvo Motors is like that.
Well, in terms of community, we're to some level we can be significant, but yes, in terms of volumes, we've got big OEM and we've got a small startup company. But I think that they were interested in understanding how we're operating, how we're making new vehicles, and the pace at which we're iterating is something that they are of course interested in. So for that one, we were given by Renault two tweezies to play with. Basically, we tiered them down, took the components that were relevant for the application, and just fitted in on the vehicle.
Are you doing software as well?
Well, software. We've been doing some interesting partnerships with software companies. We've worked with Siemens, for example. We're working with Autodesk today on CAD software.
Do you use that 360 software?
No, we don't. We're using different packages. Okay. And I might not be able to give you all
because that's like with all that communities uh-huh. and collaborate, like you definitely know GrabCAD, that large.
We're not GrabCAD, no. We're actually taking the CAD files and we're actually producing it.
Yeah.
So GrabCAD is a great community, but it's a little bit different from what Locomotives is. We're a hybrid between a community and a manufacturing company.
No, I just mean
what is GrabCAD?
GrabCAD is a community of like more or less CAD designers. And
that are sharing CAD files.
Sharing CAD files, you can just
like
go there.
Like file.
If you search for that watch,
yes, exactly.
If you, uh-huh. but more professional. If you want that watch or uh-huh. something like that, mm-hmm. you try to find it, and mm-hmm. somebody's built it.
Yeah,
and you can download it.
Mm-hmm. And you're not going to have to model your bolts and nuts. Well, you're going to find a model that is what you're looking
and
for.
Because they have that service that if you're not able to model something, you mm-hmm. can do sketches, mm-hmm. Send it to them, and they'll find a modeler for you, mm-hmm. which says, okay, I'll give me $100, mm-hmm. and I'll make that phone case for you and stuff. So they. But it is a large community with sort of with a agree on a CAD file stuff and the and Autodesk, which is a large
CAD package.
Mm-hmm. They have a software that sort of should be like accessible from everywhere, from mm-hmm. everybody with every knowledge that they have and. Mm-hmm. I hardly use it. I have it, but anyway, I mean that is there is more and more software. Although there are large companies, but in your the people in the community, they use the software that they like. And
exactly, we're completely open to the format that they are working with. This is important. You cannot force people that are doing it for fun, that are doing it for participating in something new, to buy a heavy license or an expensive license for a CAD package. Mm-hmm. It's just not what we're here for.
So it's I don't know the prices for CAD packages, but there are different. There are different patches, it's like mm-hmm. like for different kinds of work.
Sure.
So mm-hmm. so is there maybe some of the members of the community, they have access to the, say, professional packages?
We've worked with some of the software companies mm-hmm. to make those CAD packages accessible to the community members.
Okay.
For example, we've worked with Siemens. Mm-hmm. They've got a CAD package called Solid Edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Solid Edge, I'm going to give order of magnitudes because I don't know the exact pricing, but
it should be at least like 10,000-15,000 or something like that.
That's probably on the high end, but it is fairly expensive, and we've worked with Siemens to offer key functionalities for mm-hmm. CAD design under a new, on a monthly renewable type of license. So you pay $20 per month, mm-hmm. you've got access to that package.
Oh, that's
you're
cool.
able to get additional functionalities and pay mm-hmm. an extra for that, and upgrade and downgrade as you want on a monthly basis.
We're talking about that. What's with the politics around uh-huh. bicycles uh-huh. too? And
well, there's definitely a lot of things that are moving. There's a lot of enthusiasm around using bicycles in the context of urban environment. Yeah. There's definitely challenges with the other modes of transport, the cars, the trucks, the delivery vehicles. Those are topics that are very hot, I think, and are getting a lot of attention.
Yeah. And we too, actually, we were lucky that our grandfather bought had a transportation trike,
mm-hmm,
already in, uh-huh, the '50s or whenever, uh-huh, and
a cargo bike.
Yeah, the classic one with the, yep, two wheels in front.
Yep.
And
I have the same one for my kids.
And we
which
and
one do you have?
The Christiania.
Ah, mm-hmm. I have a Johnny Loco.
Okay.
Well, because he's got the one from my grandpa stolen. Well, that's another story. And we've been using it when we were children. We, uh-huh, had tuned it with another saddle and like we're racing it, and it's, uh-huh, really fun. And you can put stuff on it and, uh-huh, go to the. Well, it's not a carpool sale then. It's a, uh-huh, it's
flea market
then. And so the transportation, the inner city transportation, uh-huh, since the invention of the e-bike is like changing, because you can do it with smaller vehicles, and well, that might be a job for Local Motors too then.
Uh-huh. Well, we're very interested in all those. I believe that there are new segments that are emerging, and that there is still a lot of things to be brought to market. We can see players like Renault with the Twizy, or Toyota with the iRoad, getting into something that is not a car, something that is not a motorcycle.
Have you seen the iRoad already? Or
yes.
Like,
uh-huh,
because it looks a bit Toyota.
Uh-huh.
But,
I think it's interesting.
Have you driven it?
I have not driven it, no. I hope I'll be able to do that in the near future.
We've seen the Murai around there.
Uh-huh. Have you? Uh-huh.
They were pushing it.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was...
maybe for a display. Push model.
Probably.
Yeah. And because Toyota has sort of a strange design language, uh-huh, in some cars, and, uh-huh, so it... I mean, at least it attracts,
uh-huh,
the view.
Attention, yeah.
And because the fuel cell,
uh-huh,
is the first bicycles with fuel cells were around already too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether Cyclorob does it. I've seen one of these prototypes with, mm-hmm, with methanol,
uh-huh,
fuel, and because this is a cool application too, that, uh-huh, you have fuel cells in the thing.
And there are tons of
hand inductive charging and whatever.
There are tons of interesting projects going on in that field. Mm-hmm. I was at CBIT and I saw university studio around ABS and ESP systems for bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
Who did that?
A university
project? Or?
I can look at the... I think it's Pforzheim.
Ah, okay.
Pforzheim University. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are the ones that are working on this project.
They were at CBIT?
Yes.
Ah. I mean, Pforzheim University works together with Canyon, uh-huh, a bicycle builder, as far,
uh-huh,
as I know.
Uh-huh.
And, well, I mean, it could help, at least with when it comes to e-bikes,
mm-hmm,
because the people that haven't driven for a while and had the old like bicycle that they used every once in a while,
mm-hmm,
and when they, my neighbor actually,
mm-hmm,
when they come to e-bikes, even if they're just like 25 kilometers per hour,
uh-huh,
there is constant power, and sometimes they are just it's just too much,
uh-huh,
they don't know how to, they brake different,
uh-huh,
and ABS could be like a solution for them, and if it works.
In the applications, we're talking about bicycle, but there's smaller
ESD,
different types of vehicles, three wheels, four wheels, lightweight. Those are all types of vehicles that are going to see a lot of innovation in the years to come.
ESP would be great for tricycles, because my wife doesn't want to ride the tricycle because it tips over. If you go in a corner, you have to know what this bike does.
You know that you have
the dynamics of the bike.
So if anybody asks me what kind of cargo bike to buy, I'd rather have them buy a two-wheeled one.
Because a two-wheeled one?
A two-wheeled one, because it's easier to ride.
Yeah.
It's more like a normal bicycle. Uh-huh. If they want one with three wheels, I tell them that it has its disadvantages and they have to learn it. It's this Christiania grip when you corner.
Yeah. It's way fun. It's
And there's, for the moment, those bikes are not tilting. Having a tilting mechanism could be interesting. Yeah. Again, I think there's...
Or like ESP, if you go in the corner too fast, just the brakes.
For a standard bicycle, it's just like the wheelie button.
I don't know what else you have to, just in case you forget something, but... What I find interesting is that, you said you are demand driven, so it's like you're like a workshop that has certain competences, building vehicles. But you can build, or you're not. In your mind, you're not fixed on a certain kind of vehicle.
Exactly. Well,
and the couple of years ago, when you're in Europe now, and you say you have your community, and I'm not a cab designer, but is that where are those ideas different from the countries where they come from? From designers.
So on the ideas from the designers, you don't have to be a designer, you don't have to be an engineer to come and share your thoughts.
Well, I said designer because that's what we talk about.
Sure.
If you work with if you become part of the community, and you're in Europe, probably your ideas are different than those from the United States.
And that's what's interesting about the co-creation process and the fact that we're inviting our whole community to participate, to have ideas for Berlin. Maybe the designer or the engineer or just the enthusiast that will have the right idea for Berlin lives in Mumbai or in Washington. Mm-hmm. And that's why what is interesting, having the ability to engage this diverse community in the development process. Having local engagement is very important, very important also for the feedback loop. We might have a great idea, but that might not be applicable to the local environment, circumstances, regulations, etc. So having this diversity and the always being grounded in the local environment is very important.
And I see, because you've been showing us a few slides, and there is a shop button. How does sales work? And how many have you sold already? And what's with maintenance and stuff? You're not in classic OEM. You won't have these
microfactories. So the microfactories have three missions. One, we invite our community to come in the labs part to develop new type of vehicles, iterate, get their ideas out on the field. Second is to produce the vehicles, and the third one is actually a retail point. So we're selling the vehicles where we're producing them. This is also where we are servicing them. So, for example, the first vehicle was meant for the desert, for the American Southwest. So we relocated the company. Originally, we were in Massachusetts, and we went to Arizona because this is where the vehicle is meant to be used. In terms of volumes, the Rally Fighter, that's the Rally Fighter. It's a head turner, very, very interesting design, very capable vehicle. We've produced between 80 and 90, I don't have the exact number, but that's the order of magnitude, the number of units that we've produced and sold and that are
on
the roads.
How much is it?
The Rally Fighter is $99,000. It's actually more than just the vehicle, it's also an experience. You spend 2-3 day weekends at the micro factory with the team that take you through the build process of the vehicle. So you arrive on the first day, put your safety glasses on, you might not need in your case, but you're basically bolting on your engine and your gearbox and then bolting that onto the chassis and taking the driveline on the vehicle. And at the end of those 2-3 day weekends, you drive back home with the car that you have built. So an interesting one. We also worked on other vehicles. We did a vehicle for DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. They wanted to prove that a military relevant vehicle could be developed through co-creation. And we did it. Basically, from the scoping session, basically a team of DARPA around the table defining the application of the vehicle, which was at the time reconnaissance and recovery vehicle, to the date we delivered it ahead of schedule and on budget. That was a 5 month period where we launched, first got the scoping session, did a challenge brief, launch a challenge, run the challenge, close the challenge, award the winner, and prototype the vehicle. That's 5 months. President Barack Obama was at the event where we delivered the vehicle, and he talked about us in very kind words.
And that had like bulletproof windows and
Bulletproof. No, the application is about speed, and therefore it's a very light vehicle.
Okay.
A lot of buzz generated with that, but it was also a great event for our community. I remember a community member wrote to us, I heard about the 162 community members, I've heard President Barack Obama talking about the 162 community members that participated in the design challenge. And I almost cried because I knew he was talking about me. So, see, it's giving the ability to our community members to be part of great projects. And some come for money, some come for fame, but some come for fun, and this is the type of rewards that we can provide on top of royalties when we're selling vehicles.
Do the members have a bargain on cars then, or?
Bargain? Well, Michele, I know the designer of the Strati, for example, is going to get one for free. to some extent, yes. So that's the XC2V. We were approached then by some companies I mentioned maybe already, but we've worked with companies like BMW, Peterbilt truck company in the US, equivalent of a Volvo truck. We've worked with Domino's Pizza to design a delivery vehicle. We've worked with...
On that basis?
Not on that basis, no. We worked also with Between, the bicycle company from the Decathlon Group. We worked with Siemens, we worked with Shell, a number of companies because they were interested in that diversity and the ability to quickly go from an idea to a vehicle. It was taking us away from building vehicles for locomotives. We to some extent retired a little bit that activity and concentrated on our vehicles. We did a hardtail motorcycle called the Racer. We did a powered bicycle called the Cruiser with two versions, one electric, one internal combustion engine. And we did an electric drift trike called the Verado. Tons of fun. 5 kilometers per hour on the parking lot and you're drifting. It's just super, super fun.
Which country are they popular in? Is that...
This one, we're currently ramping up the production capacity to 5,000 units per year in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. In the U.S.? Because I thought they were popular in New Zealand
in New Zealand,
somewhere like that?
Downhill
riding.
But this one...
That's where I saw them about a year ago or something.
And that's downhill drift trikes, but those are powered. So you've got a motor, in-wheel motor on the front, so you can drift on your parking lot. No need of a hill and no need of a friend who drive you up the hill.
And who has initiated this project?
So this one is one of our team members that just tinkered the first version of the Verado at the back of the in the lab in the microfactory in Arizona. A lot of very positive feedback from the people that test drove it. Mm-hmm. So, okay, there might be some demand for that vehicle. So we ran a Kickstarter campaign just to figure out if there was demand. We exceeded our goals in terms of sales, and we said, okay, there's traction, there's demand for that vehicle. So we use Kickstarter. We use different tools depending on what type of application it is. If we're looking for a product, a vehicle that is fairly low cost, this one is about $1,500-$1,600. A crowdfunding campaign is a good tool to validate that there is a demand for the vehicle. For other type of vehicles, we might just work directly with the customers. If you're talking about a fleet of logistics vehicles or vehicles for sharing schemes, you might want to talk with the fleet operator to validate the demand. And we're working also on interesting technologies, the 3D printing technology, for example. So we did this vehicle, the Strati. The designer is Michele Anoe from Italy. We 3D printed it at a show in Chicago for the first time in September last year. And again, got quite a lot of coverage with this. So now we're...
Actually, I'm writing books as well. An extract of an image of a TV program with that car in this is in my latest book.
cool. Well, you've seen the video. I will skip it. So
that was from the CES.
But we can for our listeners, we can have it in the show notes. They can have a look at the video.
Sure. And basically our community have come up with tons of different and various concepts. And today we want to focus on urban mobility and tackling the challenges of urban mobility. More and more people are getting to the city. It's putting pressure on the infrastructure. It means more congestion, more pollution, more noise. How do we tackle that? What new type of vehicles can we dream of, conceptualize, and then put on the roads to tackle those challenges? And that's what we're doing with the Urban Mobility Challenge. We want to design, build, and market those vehicles that will tackle the urbanization challenge. So we've got a teaser. I'm not sure it's going to be good for the podcast. It's really about...
Yeah.
It's about...
Is that teaser on your website?
Yes,
too?
This is for Berlin.
It's for Berlin.
Yeah.
And that's we've just issued a blog post yesterday, so you can have a link there if you want.
Yeah. And you said the next
the official start or, or press conference or whatever you started.
Launch of the challenge is on the 25th.
Yes. On the 25th. Next. So we probably have that before on our... Probably we'd have that interview if it's possible, because he does the,
the technology. The editing and the...
editing and so...
That starts March 25th.
Cool.
And you can link also, there's Berlin 2030 as the short URL.
Maybe you can just send a mail to, to Thomas or to myself with the info, so we can post them.
Cool.
So... can anybody take part there? Say me, I can't design, I have no idea from CAD, I'm writing, I'm an author. Can I take an active role in that project?
For sure.
What kind of role would that
you,
be?
You can provide feedback on the concepts that are shared, for example. If you have the experience of Berlin, you've been here, you know how it works, and some community members might have ideas that are a bit pie in the sky, you can provide feedback saying, okay, in this event, in the city, this wouldn't fly. But if you take that into account and change a little bit the concept, then it will be relevant for the local market. So providing that feedback doesn't require the skills of CAD or design.
So in that competition...
It is then relevant.
So in that competition... That you launch, and there is a timeline, and there are certain goalposts. And well, if you, Hans, actually don't participate until that and don't give a feedback, well, you can't. So that is like to push the whole thing.
Exactly. So we're going to release the.
And if you've got a better idea and it's too late for that model, then the next.
The next. And anyway, when we take one of the concept, then we take it to market. We prototype it and then put it into production, industrialize the vehicle. Then there is always feedback that is required, so that we are improving on a constant basis the vehicles.
So how many projects are you running in parallel?
In parallel, it depends. Today we've got a couple. We're very much around the projects that are in close contact with direct digital manufacturing, so 3D printing and milling. But we also have a project around low cost or affordable sports platform, sports car platform called SFO1. We have the vehicles that we currently have in production. So we've got the Rally Fighter, we've got the Racer Cruiser Verado, we've got the Strati we're working on. We're launching this this challenge. We're going to have also a challenge, or a graphic design challenge around a helmet design. So there's a couple of efforts that we're running at the same time.
So say if you have if you're a freelance designer, for example, and you can go to the community to register and have a look what's there
and participate with
either. And if you're an author too,
Are you building engines as well?
We're not yet building engines. We're currently leveraging as much as possible off-the-shelf components. We don't want to reinvent the wheel, and therefore the Rally Fighter, for example, has the motor of from GM. We're using the powertrain of the Renault Twizy for the first iteration of the Strati. Eventually, we'll get into making engines or... if we don't find what we're looking for on the marketplace. But there's tons of things already existing.
So there are people specking, is it called? The car as well.
But actually, if it comes to...
Or a mobile device, that's called.
But wherever Local Motors moves to with that with that vehicle, there might be a need with volume or to create something new. And I mean, if you've got like a perspective to build, say, 50,000 a year, then you can build other tools and things. As you're not limited to 3D, you can like asked a manufacturer to build you an aluminium
partnering with
body in white or whatever,
a large supplier, and getting things that are well tuned for us, for sure. And there's the parts bin today is very large. Having access to that parts bin is a little bit more complicated. From a European perspective, the awareness of local motors is very low compared to, let's say, North America. North America, we've had a lot of coverage in the press, on TV, and therefore the people know about local motors. Local motors in Europe, well, I've done a couple of talks, and I ask, you know, who knows about local motors? There's not a lot of hands being raised.
The thing, what in Europe is a bit different, maybe, with other countries. Countries and Germany, that they are like, Germany at least is like patent based, and they don't want to share. They don't want to share their knowledge, which is different in America, I think. And seeing Elon Musk like give the patents of the batteries and the cars like to the public, you just use it because it makes the market bigger. And you wouldn't see that on BMW.
Well, probably things are evolving. Yeah. I think those, you know, Elon Musk, and you also have is it Nissan or Toyota that have released patents around fuel cell application.
That's right. Yes, Toyota.
Toyota did. Yeah. So things are changing, and I think OEMs, whether they are in Europe or elsewhere, are noticing and are considering it.
Hier endet unser Interview. Vielen Dank noch einmal an Damien de Klerk. Wir sind gespannt darauf, wie sich das Projekt entwickelt. Vielen Dank auch an unseren Sponsor. Fahrradio wird unterstützt von SRAM. Mehr Informationen zur Marke und den Produkten findest du unter www.sram.com.